Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is Olivia James. Olivia was born into the program by a family of drug traffickers. Olivia was trauma trained in programs like MK Ultra, where her mind was split to create altars used for missions on Earth and in space. She was used for espionage, occult, beta, and corporate programs. Olivia's main focus is finding her memories, using them to heal her alters, and hoping that her memories can assist others. Olivia is also an author of her own book telling about her story. So without any further ado, Olivia, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited about having you on here, Olivia. If you will, please take us through your voyage of discovery, how you arrive at this point, and the milestones and the guide stones along the way, where you began to recover and piece together your life and get on the job of reintegrating and healing. And so please start wherever you're comfortable.
Sure. I usually start. And this is kind of how I kind of put my timeline together is I start at the beginning with my parents. And because that was a big impact on how I came to be into this, particular program. So I always start with saying I had really interesting parents, not the normal type parents. My parents were, in the 60s and 70s, early 70s, they were drug traffickers. So my father, he got recruited into Army intelligence when he was just 18 years old. So it was really interesting for a kid that young to be recruited for intelligence. And he was actually a code breaker on the German-Russian border. So that was really interesting for somebody so young to be recruited, in that particular program. He did a lot of work. And he also spoke German, so he was a translator too. And that was part of the code breaking because they were, working on that kind of thing. So that was really interesting. But when he got out of the military, he kind of got hooked up with drug trafficking. And if anybody knows anything about drug trafficking in the 60s and 70s, I mean, it's not unknown that they were interconnected with various government agencies, that kind of thing. If you want to do research on that, anybody can find that information. So what he started doing was he was very good at, he was the one that would take it across the border, bring it back and forth. And as far as I know, there were tons of drugs, rooms full sometimes, according to the reports I've heard. There were rooms full of drugs at times. Lots of money. My mom was actually his, I don't want to say partner, but she helped him by doing the laundering. So she would go into the bank and kind of launder a lot of money. And according to her, they were making upwards of $50,000 a day sometimes. And that was a lot for the 60s and 70s for young people, 20, 21 years old to make all this money. And they had two young kids. It was me and a sister. But as he was doing that drug trafficking, he was getting really good. He was working with the cartels in Mexico for this. He was using a bus. He was using a plane. They used car. They went by car a lot. As far as I know, sometimes they would drive over the border and they would park and then take a boat. And, my mom would just be on the side of the road waiting for him to come back. And then they would make it all the way across the border. And a lot of times when I was young, she would tell me that she used a bus to get across the border with the drugs strapped to her. She said they never bothered her because she thought it was because she was American. But if you look at some research, they actually had a contract with government agencies to let these buses come back and forth. And so they wouldn't get bothered. Drug traffickers wouldn't get bothered. And at first, she said she never took me, and she goes back and forth saying she never took me with her, but then she said she did. There was times that that happened, but she never got caught. They never got caught. What really was the problem was after some years of being pretty successful in this and kind of living the high life, he got hooked on his own supply. So he became a really serious heroin addict, and that became his weakness, and he was taking the business that they had all the way down, making mistakes. You can't be reliable if you're constantly shooting up heroin. So what was happening is they decided that he wasn't doing very well anymore and they wanted somehow to get him out of the business. And they were doing these, I kind of like pop-up raids. So the first one didn't, they were, it was kind of to scare him. a first kind of raid was to scare him and, try to get him away from, doing so much of the wrong stuff. That one didn't work. He didn't stop. And so the second raid, they finally, took him in. And there was a very public trial. It was in all the newspapers and everything. I remember seeing news clippings, drawings of him like in the courtroom, things like that. There was a big newspaper trial. He had like a really expensive lawyer. He was trying to get out of this. And what happened was at the end of this trial, they just dismissed everything. No matter they, and from what I know, my mom, she's still alive. She told me that it was a crazy day when the raid happened. They, it was like a TV movie. They slammed through the front gate with their cars, bust the door down, beat my dad up on the ground, took everything in the house, things like that. So she says that he just got everything got dismissed. And all they said was they had the wrong name of the person. And right after that, he was hired by local government with no questions about his previous drug trafficking, major drug trafficking, and no questions about his addiction. So they hired, a known addict and drug trafficker to work for the local government with no questions asked. So he pretty much got what he wanted. So as far as I know, he made a deal to kind of get out of this and to stay out of prison because he was afraid of prison. And in order to stay out of prison, he had to sign something over. And that was, he signed me over. He let them use me in order to stay out of prison. So that's kind of how I got introduced into the programs is by him being afraid to do time. And I think maybe he thought that he could save everyone by just, he had this type of lifestyle is like unlike what people think. I mean, you're in constant danger. He was in constant danger. My mom told me that there was like always a threat of murder. They would have to hide on the ground. They had us hiding on the ground, little babies hiding on the ground, things like that because of, a threat saying somebody was going to come and shoot up the place. He had to have a bodyguard when he was doing this. There was a lot of danger in those times and in that kind of lifestyle. It doesn't go away. I mean, I'm not quite sure if how, I don't know how he could get away from, the cartels, but I'm sure he had help. There was no way you can just, I'm done. I don't want to see you guys anymore. I know everything, but that it just doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't. So, and I do remember when I was, I don't know, I must have been like 5 or 6. Somebody came in our yard and shot our dog in the head, and it was a huge hole. So I remember seeing my dad go out there in the backyard and he picked up our dog and it was just a massive hole in his head. And I just think it's weird that we didn't hear any barking, we didn't hear any noise, nothing. It just, somebody had just crept into the backyard and did it. And he just ended up burying him in the backyard. He didn't report it to the police or anything. So, I mean, those are just strange things. You don't hear about things like that. So for me, I always knew something was different about me. I always felt different. I always felt kind of out of place and weird and kind of like a loner, quiet. I always felt strange, if that makes sense. I always felt like something was wrong with me. And I'm just coming to, I'm coming to get these memories of, how I acted when I was younger was kind of out of the ordinary, just very, almost like, I don't know. I don't want to say like autism, but I acted different. I acted different. And they had me in school, they had me in a specific class that was for more like special education students. I think they thought I needed assistance with whatever was going on in school, but they ended up testing me. And then they immediately had to move me out of the class because I had tested very high on a lot of academic, scores and that kind of thing. They had to move me out of that classroom. So what I can remember is like if I'm thinking, so a lot of my memories come from conscious recall, learning through meditation, my own, just memories, and then also working in hypnotic regression in order to get past some of those walls that I had, which were huge in my opinion, huge. So that was a lot to get past, to get to some of where, I can see what had happened and I can put all the pieces together. So as a child, like I said, as a child, there was a lot going on in terms of, what I had going on in my head. I did my day-to-day went to school, that kind of thing, excelled in, academics. But that was just something always behind the scenes that I just, it's almost like you can feel something and you just don't know what it is, even as a child. I'm gonna jump back and forth a little bit because that's how I can see it in my head. I'm gonna jump back and forth from the story a little bit. So how I really started to get memories is because of a job I had. I got a job here on Earth, and this job was a professional job, and it was kind of like human resources, kind of interacting with a lot of people and, talking to them constantly. And there was something about it that just, I just started to have panic attacks every day. Like I couldn't handle it. I was crying all the time at work, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. There was something wrong. Something had triggered inside me. And it comes to find out through my own memories and my own, work on this, it was because this job was similar to a job they had placed me in on off planet in Mars in the corporate sector. So that's how it kind of bled through for me, and that's how it switched on and it triggered me. I mean, I could go and say there was other things, of course there were other things happening in my life that might have contributed, to reliving this particular trauma or relearning this trauma. Health issues, trauma within relationships, trauma just in life, instability, maybe having a near-death experience. There were so many different things, but I think the main thing was that particular job being, triggering some memory of what I had been doing before. So now that I was starting to work on some memories, I started doing hypnotic regression. I started to learn about some of these things. One of the things that I do remember that was really interesting as I was taken to the moon when I think I was 13, and they wanted to train me there because they wanted me to be in a particular position to do various work. And a lot of the, when we talk about the secret space program and that a lot of the work that other people talk about are military missions, these large, huge military missions, but also a lot of the work is built in espionage. I don't know if people know that it's a lot of one-on-one. Your infiltration, a lot of it is built on espionage, because you can win wars like that, just, gaining leverage and, blackmail and thing. Those are big jobs. And I want to say some of the hardest jobs I did when I was in the programs was that, because that was probably the scariest thing, because it's like almost like these huge groups battling each other. It was scarier to me than a military mission, in my opinion. So when I went to the moon, it was a regular, to me, it was relaxing. I didn't feel scared of anyone. How I got there is the only thing I can remember is I felt like I was going on a train ride, and there was an older gentleman. He was dressed in a suit, and he took me. He didn't really speak a lot, and I didn't ask questions. I never asked questions of anybody. I had been through my whole life. I never said anything. I never asked anybody anything. I didn't talk a lot, so there was not a lot of emotion, happening inside my, 13-year-old head. It was just nothing. I just went and did what they said. And so in this particular base, they had me chosen for a class called psionics. And there was a younger teacher there. She was, I don't know, she looked like she was in her, mid to late 20s, very young. I didn't think that somebody that young, but I think a lot of the people on these programs, they look young and they're not as young as they look. But she was very stern with me and she was very hard on me. But, and I appreciate it now because I can see what she was doing. She was trying to keep me alive. So I remember exactly the thing she told me. She was like, it's one look and one word. She said, that's as fast as you have to be that fast. So she's talking about how she trained me for to be a personality profiler. And I would have to go into a situation and I would have to read the room immediately. You have to be able to know who somebody is just by a handshake, a look in their eye, one word. It has to be that quick, she told me. And she said, because it's life or death if you don't know. If you don't know this and you're not quick at this, you're going to be dead. So I understand why she was very hard on me in terms of making me, even at 13, try to learn this as best I could. So I ended up, being trained for that personality profiling. I didn't go into that particular job till a little bit later in my term of service, but I was already trained for that at 13. But that can be utilized for other jobs. When I was about 19, they started having me do something called beta tracking. And beta tracking is a position where somebody would infiltrate someone else's life in terms of like a personal relationship or some type of connection in that way, a personal connection, an intimate connection almost sometimes. And that's way to their life and find out either you're gathering in intel, you're recording, or, you were meant to do something else. And if that means, sometimes people get harmed or hurt in a situation, that kind of thing. That's also what they had me doing from about 19 to, I want to say, about 29. When I was about 29, I got a promotion and they said it was for a job well done. And they took me to the corporate sector where I started doing profiling full time. So in this particular job, I was on a base on Mars called McCreery Base. And this was in the South Canal region. And it was right near kind of like a landing dock. So on this particular base, I worked under a general. His name was General Asher. So this general, when I worked under him, nobody really saw him that much. He pretty much stayed in his office. He had a secretary. So basically, I was doing the personality profiling and making recommendations for people that were incoming into the base. And a lot of these people later in my term, they started to get, and I know this, they're starting to get voluntary recruits. So before in the early, in the earlier days, like 70s, early 80s, they were kind of doing a lot of kidnapping and taking and not asking. Just like they did with some of us, they didn't ask us. But now they're getting voluntary recruits, and I tell you, these people are so excited. They think it's like a movie. They think they're in a movie, and they're excited to be on this planet and doing work and working for the government, that kind of thing. They're very excited. So I would just have them come in my office, and I'd spend, I want to say it was about an hour. I usually don't have more than that. Usually I can profile somebody within, 5 minutes, sometimes even sooner than that. So I didn't really need to take the whole hour, but sometimes I would take an hour for an assessment. And that way, and then I would send the paperwork up, to get approved. But basically it was just picking jobs for people, helping them figure out what job they should be in, what position they should take. If somebody had some type of ability that was noticed in their file, I would make a referral and send them out to a special sector, because that's where I came from. I came from a special sector myself, so I would have to send them out. I would come upon those people once in a while. You just sometimes you can read them, and sometimes what if I ha because I have a little bit of mild telepathy, so if they have that, sometimes I can catch that. And that's kind of what I caught the most, is somebody that could do that. But they would have to be retrained. They can't, I wouldn't put them, and there's a lot of different divisions for people to work in on Mars. You wouldn't think, but they have like an entertainment division. They have like a mining, other resources, water treatment. They have like the food, the agriculture. There's so many different ones that you can go in. I mean, besides, plumbing and, whatever that they need and the basic running of the base. So, I mean, there was so many people coming in, and they were coming in just from voluntary, and they were telling their family that they were going overseas. Sometimes they would take a military term overseas, but actually they were going off planet, and they would do, whatever, 4 to 20 years, however long they wanted to do it. And when I saw people getting returned, they called it retirement. They didn't call it age regression or anything like that. They called it retirement. That's what they called it. After your term of service, they said you're going to be retired, and they would sign these huge stacks of forms. I would sit with people and make sure they were signing the forms off. And people don't know what they're signing, and they don't care what they're signing, especially in this military faction that I was working for. I worked under Mars Defense Force. Nobody asked questions, and you weren't really allowed to ask questions. I never had anyone ask me a question in my office or question what I was doing or what I was saying, not once. It was kind of like a military mindset. You just keep going and you sign what they tell you to sign. So they were signing stacks of paper for their retirement that were consenting to being monitored when they get returned. You consent to be controlled and monitored by an outside subcontracted agency. Because they have to keep an eye on you to make sure they keep all this secret and quiet and nobody knows what's really going on. People have signed for this, and they don't realize you consented to this, and their signature's still out there. And they're very old school. They keep a lot of stuff on paper. They're a little bit worried about like computer hackers. So that's the reason for some of the old nostalgia, where they're putting everything on paper and files. And we had tons of files in my office, paperwork. They have a lot of paperwork, we're saying. And they're using a lot of very legal language, very generalized. They have something called like a standard issue So as far as I know, some of these documents can hold up in even off-planet courts and Earth courts. So if anybody were, if we really got a, inspired to, sue the government or whatever, they would show that these documents, they've been in Earth court saying, you consented to this. You said this was okay, that we have documentation right here that said you signed on the dotted line saying this was okay to do. So that was that. I think that's interesting, and that people should know that they're signing a lot of it away and they did consent to it. Not that it was, willing consent, because we can't really, we're not really consenting, but that's how they get around it, by using these legal language documents and their stand, they call them standard issue, they're date stamped, and you're also consenting to be killed if you're not following the, they call it like the status quo. If you're not following this and the vision of what they have, then you agree to be, you agree to termination basically. And we sign that on the dotted line before we retire, saying, yes, if I say anything wrong or do anything wrong, I agree that I should be terminated. And in the language, it looks more like you lose a job, but in actuality, it's you're consenting to being murdered because of your behavior here when you're returned. So there's so much within, I think people need to know just in the corporate sector that is, it's taken over a lot of, besides the military missions, the corporate sector is where a lot of, it's like a drop down. It's come, that comes from the top more. So people need to see where this is coming from. It's coming more from the top. They're the ones making the decisions for people and sending them out to different places and where you want to go. We don't have as much autonomy as, we think we do when we're off planet. We're not as much being heroes as we think we are, because we're all following what they say, because if you don't, you're dead anyway. So of course we have to follow what they say. We have to listen to what they say. We don't ask questions. You're not allowed to. So when I was on there, when I was doing this profiling work, I felt, I didn't feel very well. I spent my last, I probably 10 years that I was there doing this profiling work, and I ended up getting demoted because I, something was wrong with me, and I was questioning myself. I was questioning the people I worked with. I was starting to get, and what I realized, I was starting to get bleed through of life. Something was wrong with me, and it was coming through. And a lot of times I call it depression, because I didn't have an, I don't even know, we didn't have depression on Mars. You weren't allowed to be depressed, so we didn't have a word for it. But I if I look back, I was probably severely depressed because of my lifestyle. You and plus, if you have a specific ability, they, like I had, they don't want me to interact with people, other, recruits and that. They didn't, so I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have, a lot didn't like me. They thought I was kind of like, upper level. And it's very isolating. So you isolated yourself. You just do that all day, stay in your office, and then go back to your room, and then you stay there all night. You don't talk to a lot of people. You don't, there wasn't a lot of interaction that I was able to have. So I kind of felt, I felt like I was kind of going nuts in my head. I didn't know what was going on with me. So I ended up searching through my boss's office. I didn't find anything, but I just knew something was wrong, and I started to mess up my job. I wasn't being as accurate and efficient as I was. Production was very low in terms of what I was used to, and they knew something was wrong. So they ended up demoting me, and where I was doing like kind of like paperwork in some different areas, I ended up doing like paperwork for, incoming ships, signing off on forms, that kind of thing. Or I was working for a little bit time on a satellite station. They call it a satellite station, but it was a medical satellite station where some people would go and get augments, and I would have to be the person to get them to sign, because it's a way easier to get a, to get someone to sign for a medical treatment that they don't want if I'm a human. Because on some of these stations, there were non-humans working and doing some of these medical, treatments. So it was way easier to get a signature if it was me going into a room, and asking someone. It made them feel more comfortable with what they were signing for. And that's what they want. They wanted people to be comfortable. Even the way they made me dress, even if people don't remember Earth, they still had some, something inside them felt that comfort of the way I looked and the way I interacted with them. It was almost like a nostalgic feeling, like they remembered, but they didn't remember. It's almost like, being in a dream. You know something is different, but you can't put your finger on it. So that's how they wanted us to act, that we were just a little bit, a comfort for these people, so we could get this work done. So I ended up getting demoted. I ended up getting returned. And I do remember before I was I worked for enemy engagement processes for a time, and that's a lot of it is so much in terms of like espionage and, infiltrating groups. There's all these factions are fighting on Earth and off planet, and they all think they're the good guys. And they're all doing the same thing. They're all, hurting other people, hurting each other, fighting against each other. A lot of it is based on power and control in the name of conquest in the world. So all of it, I don't, now that I've worked for a few of these factions, I don't believe any of them are, I haven't seen anyone that's doing all good. I haven't found that. I haven't found that. And, a lot of them say that, we're helping everyone. We're saving the world. We're an alliance of this. I've never, especially when I know what they do behind the scenes, I can't say I've seen them do that. Maybe they have some people that are doing that. That's possible, but I haven't seen it particularly myself. But when I was in myself going into retirement, and for me, it was a chemical process as far as I remember, but I remember that I signed a form saying that I would be coded for re-entry. And that meant that once I returned, if they needed me, I agreed to be used or utilized at any time because I had already signed for that before I even returned. When I returned to my normal age, normal life, and kind of went through life thinking that or knowing that something was weird with me, knowing there was always a lot of paranormal things going on in my life. And I felt terrified all the time. Like I was scared of like the dark. I slept with the lights on. Like there was something off that I couldn't, pinpoint. And I was always, seeing things and hearing things and jumping and just weird paranormal things. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And I tried hard to figure out what it was, but I'm looking back now, and I could see throughout my life that I was shifting personalities constantly. For a matter of seconds, I could, change who I was for any situation that came around. And that's exhausting. It was exhausting. And it had come to be about, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, I had one of my alters just completely take over, and it was making me miserable. And I didn't know what it was. I almost thought it was more like a demonic infestation or something like that. So I sought somebody out to help me kind of, I actually it wasn't even me. I felt like somebody told me or pushed me, you need hypnosis, you need hypnosis. Like, and I felt like I heard it, like somebody said, you need hypnosis. And I had to have it. I found somebody that wanted to do it, like literally that weekend, that would do it with me. And when I went under, I didn't even know I could be hypnotized. But when it happened, I'd never experienced anything so, it's so hard to explain the, and I was under for 6 hours, and I had never seen anything like that with my own, inside my own mind, inside, looking out, like I see, you can see anything, you can travel anywhere, you can do anything. There's no limits when I was in that state of consciousness. And I didn't, I, when I came out of it, I was just, like I could see how people think that that's more the real world than what we are living in now, because I could go anywhere. I could see anything. I could see all the memories. I was seeing past lives. I was seeing future lives, parallel lives, everything. There wasn't a limit to what I saw. And in that session, that very first session, I was seeing like a lot of demonic figures coming, and they were speaking to me, but they were speaking through me, and they were talking and telling stories about who they were, where they're from. And then I also finally in that session was, this was a hard wall to crash through, is the wall of my memories from that time, being in the programs. And from what I found out is because there was a memory suppression technology, and I was able to try something new for myself, and I ended up remote viewing. But in remote viewing, I was actually traveling to the place in some type of like astral or spirit form. I don't know if anybody's ever remote viewed, but it was a different way. It's almost like bilocating. So I went there and I looked inside what I called the ledger. I saw somebody in a ledger and I opened this book, and I saw my name and I saw my service number in the name for where I was. It was 6349, and I was in Division Mariner in that particular faction. So for me, that was huge. That was huge to get a service number, a division, a base, a base so many different things I was getting just from doing this. I didn't even know I could do this. This was so out of my realm of possibility, out of the realm of possibility for me. I didn't know this was possible. So I started to do it more and, trying to look for, I've started meditating. I was getting, and something switched on at this time. It switched, it really did switch on. And I was getting a lot of conscious recall, but I was practicing a lot of meditation to try to get to these memories because I was almost became like obsessed with them. Like I have to know. Some people just have to know. I know some people don't want to know because of the traumatic things that happened, but for me, in my own mind and I my own heart, I had to know the truth about everything. I didn't care how painful it was. I didn't care what I did or what I saw. I needed to know everything. And I still do feel that way. Like I need everything. I don't want to stop because to me that it's been nothing but healing to get the truth. And people think that if you think that you're afraid of it, for me, the truth is what I needed to heal myself. So I was, finding so much information. And I found a lot of, at that time, I was getting a lot of, then I started to get V2K. And that's when the V2K was very noticeable to me. Because I didn't even know if I was getting it before because my alters were shifting so rapidly. But now it was very distinctive and it was very clear. And they would say things like, as soon as I started meditating, I would get to the relaxing point and I would hear them say, if you come any closer, we're going to take everything from you. Or they would put pictures in my mind of, things happening to family members, harm coming to me, threats, a lot of threats. They tried to see if they could control me in a way to where I would harm myself. Like, and these aren't your thoughts. You might be sitting watching, a sitcom or something, having a snack, and then you hear in your mind, go in the kitchen and cut your finger off. I know that's not me because I don't think like that. And if they were smarter, they would know that wouldn't work with me. So they were kind of off in their programming measures into what they thought would work with me. They should have took a different route because they should have known that that wouldn't work with me because that's not something that I fall prey to in terms of what they consider Omega programming. In terms of my life, my destruction would more be trying to find someone else to harm me rather than me harming myself. So I was kind of doing all these different things to get all these memories back, and things were flooding back. I was having so many different memories of different, I was having memories of jobs and missions. I was doing more hypnosis, and what I was figuring out is a lot of it kind of went into not just the espionage, but a lot of occult areas. Where I was finding out about some of these occult things that I had been involved in. And for me, it was really eye-opening because I want to be honest, I was scared of everything. I was a very fearful person. A little mouse almost, like I was very mousy, like very terrified of anything, scared of the dark even. And I'm like, why would these things be trying to infiltrate my life? And I grew up kind of semi-religious. Just I am not now. I'm more spiritual. But demons are trying to possess me. They're trying to take over my body. I'm afraid. I'm terrified. And they would contact me a lot. It was getting to where it was almost daily or nightly or weekly. I would have something try to speak to me in my head, or when I was sleeping, try to put their images in my mind and say. And they always said the same phrase. It was always "Let me in," "Let me in," "Let me in," and trying to talk to me and things like that. I literally was terrified. I was hoping, I thought I needed an exorcism. So I was doing a lot of hypnosis, and I was able to get to this point where I was remembering past lives. And I was seeing these, and these past lives have been so helpful to me to really get a grasp on a reason why they thought I was good for some of these programs. So one of the past lives that I saw, and this was really interesting. I saw myself as something of a dark entity myself. I chose a role as being a dark entity, and it was something called Harlowin, but it took the place of it was like a red energy. So when I was red energy, I couldn't really take a physical form. I could, but the form that I see myself in as a djinn is very. It's really disgusting, like gnarled and knotted type. It wouldn't be what somebody would consider like a god or anything like that. It was very gnarled. So I rather took the form of a red energy, and we would travel through my people, some of us, not all of us, we traveled through their blood like a virus. So when I would be able to enter someone, I would be able to enter through the blood like a virus, and there's where I could infiltrate their mind and, either control, make them do something, or make them harm themselves, or just create total havoc in their lives. Because in my eyes, when I was a djinn, I felt like that was my job. I felt like that's what I was supposed to do because I took on this role to be darkness and to be a darkness experience for other people. And believe it or not, people call this, they called it to themselves all the time. I used to call it when I was a djinn, I called it a heart call. Like I could hear somebody calling out, to be taken over and to be relieved of their life. And I was there in a second. I was there to do that for them. I'd take over because they called me. They wanted it. And that's what how I felt. I felt like I was helping people because they want this darkness in their lives. They just called me to do this and they didn't want to deal with life anymore. And I took over and destroyed their lives. And I did that for a long time. I did it for, thousands of years. And I considered myself something of like a lower trickster god, something like that. But it was part of that reason of being who I was and it still being inside me. It's not something that's attached to me. People think that you get these entity attachments. Nothing's attached to me particularly because it is me. That's just what I am at the cellular level because I'm everything that I've always been. Any life I've been, it's still in there and it was still in my cells and I'm still that person. So I can't particularly, erase that or eliminate that or I can't hire demon killer to take that, and I wouldn't want to. I don't. Now that I've learned everything, I don't want to, erase that experience because I learned so much from being that, that piece of darkness for people and what it meant, what it means on this world, in this world, what it means to be something like that. So I was also had a past life as I saw myself in, Italy, and I didn't even know they had an Inquisition in Italy. I saw myself there, and I was like somebody in a local village that was probably what people would consider a medium. And, I thought I was helping people. They wanted to talk to their dead loved ones. And I was, seeing people in my house and, and then these men came to town and word got around what I was doing. And lo and behold, a few days later, they came to my house, pulled me, dragged me to a wagon, punched me in the face and everything and took me to, pretty much a dungeon where they tortured me for days. And I was really angry at that life. In that life, I built up a lot of rage toward the end of my death. I was very angry because I had two children that had to go live with an uncle. And they came to see me once, while I was in the dungeon. And I really didn't want them to because I'm sure it like traumatized them for the rest of their lives. And I didn't want them to see me like that, but they had me hanging from a ceiling just by my arms. And my arms had like dislocated. So they were pulled up from the shoulder. And I actually died from, dehydration and starvation. It wasn't particularly from being burned at the stake or anything like that, because they wouldn't feed us or anything until you said what they wanted you to say. And I never did. But towards the end, I was so angry. I was so angry at these people for what they did to me. And I was just trying to help people. So that anger kind of stayed in me. And I still feel it sometimes, like when I feel like somebody says something about me that's not, true, I feel that like, oh, I almost feel like I'm pushed back there. Like, they're targeting me. They're saying things that aren't true and making me seem like I'm somebody that I'm not, in order to, and they're trying to make me, denounce what I am and, make me apologize for being what I was at that time. And I still feel that sometimes, just because of that life. But where I was going with this is that when I was a younger kid, I don't know, I must have been like 9, 8 or 9. I had just been taken out of this program. So for where I went and did my MK Ultra training, it was at a psychiatric hospital on the East Coast. It's a girl open. But I particularly don't remember how I would have been gone for 6 months and nobody noticed unless they just agreed to it and let it happen. I did ask my mom once, did she ever notice me leaving at night? And she said it's possible. That was her answer. It was just, it's possible. So I don't know how to take that. And I don't even know if she knew or didn't know. I don't think she does know most of this. She said she didn't know most of this, but I was taken to this psychiatric hospital and that's where they did a lot of, MK Ultra training. And part of what they were doing in the psychiatric hospital, it was just me and one other boy. His name was Jacob. That might not have been his real name, but We were just in a small wing. There was nobody else but us. There was a female psychiatrist, and then she had a few, what I considered like orderlies or assistants that, dressed in scrubs, and they did a lot of like some of the Monarch and MK Ultra training. But what she was doing is trying to figure out if she could do something called syncopated dissociation. What they wanted us to do was dissociate at the same time and see what the effects of that could be. Could we do that at the same time? So they were giving us a lot of electroshock therapy, LSD, also combined with physical and psychological and emotional abuse. So they were making it very systematic too. So they would do something about every 15 to 20 minutes, almost like a preschool programming. So they would ha it's almost like Pavlov, like we were learning to anticipate the pain and too. They would come in, they would hit you, they would try to, not give you any food, you couldn't use the bathroom, they wouldn't let you do anything, you couldn't talk, they'd slap you, hit you in various places, and then also with the electroshock therapy. But we got to a point, me and this other child, where our they figured we did dissociate and we left the body, we escaped the body to escape this pain and the suffering. We would leave the body and kind of like our spirit would kind of like move around the room and that kind of thing, and just watch to avoid what was actually happening inside the body. There was a lot of like sexual abuse, that kind of thing. They were trying to train us for various different things, and they did consider us both successful in terms that we were able to specifically, I mean, it was 118 alters that were trained and programmed and to work in different jobs. But after I was done in that. In that training, she, I don't know if they call it a referral or however they term it. She sent me to somebody called Dr. Green. And I even remember this Dr. Green, being at my back door once. He was an older gentleman, very thin at the time. And he had these little, like, wire thin kind of glasses. And he was, pretty bald on the top. He almost looked very frail, like he was kind of getting up there in age, or maybe he was sick. He was out sick and elderly at the time. But he took me to his office, and in that office, he had two people, and they looked like they might have been brother and sister. I'm not quite sure. Very pale, very blonde hair. And I think they were, I don't know if they were twins or not, but they didn't speak to me, but he was like saying that they were going to do kind of like an examination on me. So they kind of like were looking me over. They were doing things like opening my eyes and looking in my eyes, opening my mouth and, looking my nose, anywhere they could see. They were just looking inside me. And when they were done with that, they told him, "We can see the thing inside her." That's what they told Dr. Green. And so what he did, he chose me for this project called Project Traveler. And it was this way of kind of building up the abilities that I already had inside me, which I didn't know I had. And it's a way where I can allow myself to be voluntarily possessed by another entity, and it doesn't harm me, doesn't make me sick, it doesn't make me tired. I don't get psychologically or physically harmed by it. So it can happen and it can go on for hours, and after it, I feel fine. There's no trauma to me in any way. So, and if people don't know, these are very sought after kind of programs and people in these programs, because people don't know how much power is behind this dark side. It's just like waiting to be released. And that's kind of what they're seeking out. And there's a lot of factions, a lot of kind of like elite families that are utilizing this program in order to gain access to this particular realm. So when I was older, they started using me on under selling me basically under Monarch Solutions for something like for this Project Traveler, but there were these families that were purchasing this. And when I would go to these houses, they were actually really nice to me. They didn't hurt me or anything, because this is a way for them to be connected to what they would call like a personal daemon. And that means, they get to be attached to their God. They get to, connect with their God and, these kinds of things. And like I said, I got treated really well, because why would they harm me if I'm bringing their God through? So these were some times that I didn't feel too bad. And I would lay down and go under trance for them and let something take my body over. And a lot of times they were, the people were very excited, you know. And sometimes I had people that just wanted to have dinner with their God. And they just, you know, they let me eat at the table and they just watched me eat and they would talk to me. And, you know, some of them would ask questions about business and things like that. So a lot of these families, they think they're keeping their status, their financial status and power by their connection to these familiar spirits. But from what the entity told me, he always says that, or they say that they don't know what they're talking about, and that's not them that do anything for them, really. It's, you know, they were born into wealth, so they have wealth already when they, you know, come out of the womb. So it's, you know, they're already set up, and they, but in their mind, they think that through the generations, by keeping this familiar spirit, that and keeping reverence to him and praying to it and offering, pretty much is what they say. They call it food. And they think that that's how they stay in power, but it's not really. It's just a way for them. It's a way for these entities to keep being fed. And, you know, when they say that, the entities tell me that that's how they live, you know, and if they don't have followers, they will die. They said, you will see the death of the gods if no one believes in me. If we stop believing in them, they're going to die, they said. So that, you know, if you were to shut your mind off to everything that you thought was in the demonic realm, they would start to starve and die pretty much from what they say. They said they need followers. They need people to believe in them to make them live. They always say that. So they were doing these types of, and I was doing this quite often, and I guess I was good at it. And I still am kind of good at it. I just have rediscovered being able to do this. So sometimes I'll do this under hypnosis, and I've gotten so much information just allowing myself to be voluntarily taking over and to have whatever wants to come through just speak. And I always thought, like, my whole life I was terrified of these things because, and now I see there really was nothing to fear. It has taken a lot of the fear away from what I thought was real. It's taken a lot of the fear of being able to see how something could be inside me and not harm me. You know, not threaten me, not try to kill me, nothing. And just speak on what it is, what it wanted, what it does, and then leave and leave quietly into the back to the other realm and not try to, you know, harm me in any way or harm anyone else. I mean, they can get a little feisty at times if you, and they put a lot of emphasis on respect because in where we're from, I mean, like jinn and other things, there's very much a hierarchy and they take respect very seriously. So if you come and you don't show the respect to what they consider themselves as gods, if you're not coming there with, you know, a respectful manner, that it's going to be an argument. So they start arguing with anybody that doesn't come with respect. And that's happened before with different hypnotherapists. You know, if they're not showing respect to this, it will become like an hour-long argument. So I'd rather just avoid that. So I tell people, don't argue with them. Let them say what they need to say and they'll leave. They do leave. But actually, I've gotten some of the most information I've gotten is from these entities. They tell everything. They tell how they have got contracts with the government themselves because they're utilizing them for various things. Like you can find, they can give information. They know that they have this gift. They have this gift of, you know, all-knowing power, all-knowing sight. You know, they're from a different realm. They can give you more than we even realize. So I guess I'm taking the risk for people and, you know, getting that information. I don't recommend it to anyone else because I don't believe anyone else, or I'm not saying anyone else in the world, but not a lot of people are going to have this ability to just allow this to happen and, you know, not be harmed by it. When I was really young, after they, Dr. Green had found me, they were doing some experiments where when they found out I could do this or what I was, they would put me in a room, a dark room by itself, like sensory deprivation, nothing in the room, just a chair. They would have me sit in the chair. They'd have me hooked up to an IV. They didn't feed me anything for days. They were trying to measure some type of the output of what would happen when I would let something take over my body. Because some of that is measured in energy. You couldn't measure like specific electrical, you know, output and things like that. Because a lot of it comes from my solar plexus. A lot of that, you know, power or whatever it is comes from there. And then top of my head too. So they were trying to measure that. But I thought it was really weird that they wouldn't feed me, they wouldn't give me anything, but I didn't get hurt because these entities kind of kept me alive. they kept me alive. They sustained me through this, treatment that I was receiving from humans. So it's very conflicting in me. It's hard to think of, like, I'm being tortured by humans, and a dark, supposedly what they consider dark entity, is keeping me alive, and it was trying to protect me. So it's really strange, and I understand that, to even hear this story, because I too felt a different way about it when it was first happening and what I was seeing. I was conflicted myself because of the way I was taught, in certain religion, religious views and beliefs, the way I was taught that this is, if you're going down this road, it's all bad, it's all evil, you're just, you're a bad person for doing this. And I'm like, I know what I was. I wasn't, I'm never, tr I'm not trying to harm anybody, I want to help people, but I can't take this part away, and I can't help that these beings feel that in me, and they can, it's almost like being on the same frequency. And that's what they say, that I'm a kindred spirit, so they can see me anywhere. They said, we know you, we know our people here on Earth, and we know how to find you. That's what they tell me. That's why they found me. They said, we can see you, because of who I used to be. They used to be able to see who I was. So those are some of the, kind of different places where I kind of got into. Do you have any questions about any of that? Or I know I kind of
Oh, no,
talked pretty
it's
fast.
quite interesting. I think it'd be a good time to take a break. Could you give our
Okay.
listeners an idea of how they may be able to reach out to you and talk about how they can obtain your book?
I have a book on Amazon. It's called Gray Mouse, Sex, Space, and Mind Control. I'm working on my second book. It's almost done. It should be out within the next couple months. And I'm on Facebook, Olivia James. It's me with a, you can notice me, it's me with a mouse on my shoulder.
Yes, and we got a lot more to go through in the second segment. We're just getting started here. To our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.